Tov, Boker Tov. We have just a minute before the shir, so I'll just make the introductions. As usual, our shir this year is dedicated to the memory of Lisheva Frist, Lisheva Sima, Bat Zalman, Zechona Levracha. I'm going to take the liberty also to dedicate this morning shir to the memory of my mother-in-law, Gittel Bat Yosefa Kohen, who just passed away a week and a half ago when we were there. Kadosh Baruch Hu was very kind to all of us, including my mother-in-law, that it was Beseva Tova, Mita Ben Ishika. She was pushing 103, and she was, as my wife said, for the first 100, she was terrific. I mean, really terrific. Still walking, running. It was just unreal. And then slowed down a little bit. And we were there 3.5 weeks ago, and the situation wasn't even bad. We came home, and then we got a call just a week ago to come back. So we made 2 trips. And people asked me about Purim, and first time in my life, I laid the Megillah 39,000 feet over the Atlantic Ocean. So I heard the Megillah 4 times because of a particular halachic complication that we threw ourselves into, but that's okay. That should be the worst of our tzaras, to overdose on hearing the Megillah. And because I don't get drunk anyway, so I didn't have to worry about the Yom Tov Sheni here, you know. But my mother-in-law was a good person and had good family values, and she'll be missed by the family. She was very much loved and all by her 12 grandchildren and 43 great-grandchildren, most of them in Eretz Israel. And that, to a large degree, my in-laws were, Zechronam Levracha, were very, very supportive of our aliyah, which I know that's not something to be taken for granted. For sure not. And they visited here in Eretz Israel every single simcha that we had, and Baruch Hashem, there were many, and visited at other occasions as well. Except for the 1937 fleeing from Germany, which was a tough time in her life. The rest of her life was pretty much, as we call it, almei menuchot, and thank God for that. In 1988, when I was beginning my tenure as a Rav in Ramot, so immediately after Simchat Torah, which that year was on a Thursday, and 2 days later was Shabbat Breshit, I thought I was going to be funny. I said, 6 months to Pesach. And 2 women fainted, like, don't tell me when Pesach is. We just got through Sukkot, you know, like 6 months of Pesach. Okay. But, you know, when you start reading Parshat Shkalim and Parshat Zachor and Parshat Parah and this coming Shabbat HaChodesh, and it's after Purim already, you kind of figure out that Pesach is around the corner with the Adar Sheni and everything intact. The halakha of Sholim V'Dorshim B'Lchot Pesach Kodem HaPesach Shloshim Yom, that we are to begin inquiring about the reviewing the halachot of Pesach a month before Pesach, kicks in several interesting halachot, that if a person is not going to be home for Pesach, a week before, 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before, a month before, 2 months before, leaves the house on Hanukkah and is coming home in the summer, does he have to make bedikat chametz or not? So the Gemara says that if a person leaves the home within a month before Pesach, that is after Purim, so, and you're not going to be off for Pesach at all, you have to make bedikat chametz, without a brocha, albeit, but you have to do bedikat chametz. If it's before Purim, and you're not going to be back for Pesach, so you're exempt, really, from bedikat chametz. The Gemara says, why? Gemara says, because the halakha of sholim v'dorshim b'lchot Pesach kodem ha-Pesach shloshim yom, that we are to inquire about the halachot, review the halachot, that means our mindset after Purim is Pesach. But nobody thinks Pesach on Hanukkah. So therefore, the halacha couldn't demand that you do a bedikat chametz in the month of Kislev or Tevet or Shvat. But with regard to after post-Purim experience, yes, we can have already bedikat chametz. So that's an interesting halacha. And then there's a minhag. Some have the minhag not to eat matzah 2 weeks before Pesach, and some a month before Pesach. That's pretty widespread. The halacha is you now to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. That's a din. But with regard to the minhag, so it extends all the way until Purim. And I'm just going to mention an interesting anecdote. When 1984, when I was in the in my reserve duty in the chaplaincy in Lebanon, South Lebanon, it was about an hour's drive north of Matula, in the area of the Hermon, actually, So there, we had to kasher all kinds of bases for Pesach, and that was my job, and I was there for about a week and a half. So that year, Pesach also came out. Monday night was the Seder. And we had a instructions from the chief rabbi of the army to go Pesach in the army in Lebanon Wednesday before. We didn't want to take any chances. It was already a war zone, and it was quite a war zone. So we were kosher le Pesach already from Wednesday, which means there was no chametz in the base at all. And they were serving matzahs. Now, I had no qualms. The chayelim had to eat, so they ate. But here was Shabbat HaGadol, Shabbat 3 days before Pesach. You need lechem mishnah. So what I would have done in the city was go to the makolet and buy a box of egg matzahs, matzah shira. But the Maronite Christian makolet didn't carry egg matzahs that day. So we were a little bit stuck because there was no challah, no lechem, and there was no matzah. So what do you do? So I asked the mefakeh, the commander, I want everybody in the dining room at 3 p.m. We did hatarat nedarim on the minhag of not eating matzah for a month before Pesach to allow us lechem mishnah on two matzahs. So that was a very interesting, unique experience. And because the halacha demands that we focus on Pesach situations and halachot, so for these weeks, we're going to do things that have to do with Haggadah in the spirit of what I've been doing the whole year of dealing with different nusach of tefillot and brachot and so on. And the first, may be using this page this week and next week as well. So we have the opening is a few sections of Rambam Hilchot Chametz Umatzah. The Rambam begins his laws of Chametz Umatzah in the 8th chapter. He's going to talk about Seder night. The first word is sidur. Sidur means the order of. He's not talking about the sidur, davening. He's talking about the order of. And he's going to talk about the seder, what we call the seder. And remember, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that order is a very, very nice thing in life. I mean, if you're a thoroughbred yekka, ordnung, that's like the way to go. There are some mitzvot that actually suggest that we should do it in a particular order, but the order may not be critical. I'll give an example. So under the chuppah, we have 7 brachot. Everybody sees it in a birchon, in a bencha, you see the order of 7 brachot. But what if by accident the brachot was said out of order? That has happened sometimes under the chuppah where a Rav Masada Kedushin slips up with the cards and they give somebody the wrong bracha. So you just make the one that you skipped and that's all. So you'll have 5, 6, or you can have, 4, 6, and 5. It's not a big deal. So we have an order, and the order is significant, except that it's not critical. So too, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, and it's based on a pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim, Mele'atcha v'dimacha lo ta'acher, that the order of the giving of Truma Maser Rishon, Truma to the Kohen, Maser Rishon to the Levi, Maser Sheni, it should be done in that order. But if it's not done in that order, if the farmer gives the produce to the Levi first, and then on afterwards to the Kohen, he doesn't have to give the Levi again. He fulfilled his mitzvah. So that's a mitzvah, what's called Lichatchila. This is the way it should be done. But if it's done otherwise, it's still going to carry weight and so on. The Rav felt that there were 3 areas of halacha where the order is critical, which means if you do it out of order, it's as if you didn't do it at all. So one was the order of the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur. That was very, very essential. So essential that it became a point of departure between our Chachamim and the sectarian group, the Sadducean sect, the Tzedokim, who had a different order about things, which was based on the very simple reading of the psukim of Parshat Achremot. They seem to have had it right, except that we had an oral tradition with regard to a particular point in the Avodah that caused a little bit of a change. And because it was Kodesh Kodeshim and nobody had any view of what was going on, they didn't have hidden cameras, so we made the Kohen Gadol swear before Yom Kippur that he's going to do it according to the tradition. So the order was very, very, very important with regard to the Seder Avodat Yom Kippurim. The next was Seder of the Shmones Re Brachot. The Gemara Masechet Megillah says Shmones Re Brachot al HaSeder, which means you have 18 brachot. Today we have 19 already, but they have 19 brachot. What if you say all the brachot with a lot of kavana, except in a jumbled fashion? You have to daven again. You have to say the whole thing over because there's continuity. Not only is each bracha telling us, speaking a message, but there's continuity. We didn't get to it yet in the shir. We will, Mitzvah Hashem. But there's a story to be told from Bracha 1 until the Bracha 19. And therefore, it has to be in order. That means, I'll give an example. If a person in the winter did not say Talu Matal Livracha in Barech Aleinu, and catches himself or herself three brachot down the line, so you have to go back to Baruch Aleinu and repeat all those brachot that you already said, because they have to be in order. So it has to be Baruch Aleinu, Tka B'Shofar Gadol Chirotenu, Ashir B'Shofteinu Kvar Shana, and so on and so on and so on. So the order is very, very critical with regard to Shmon Esrei. And the third example was Seder night. And this is going to be interesting because, all right, you have a bunch of things to do. You know, what's the whole point of Seder? So that's why the Rambam is going to teach us the important and critical facet of Seder night. It wasn't the grandmother who called it the Seder. It wasn't the Bubba. It was the Halacha that called it the Seder. And that's why the Rambam opens with the first word, Sidur Asiyat Mitzvot Eilu Belel Chamisha Asar Bo Kachu. The order of the performance of the mitzvot on the night of the 15th of Nisan, here it is. Kachu, this is the way it's going to be. And it has to be exactly like this. Now, we in kindergarten have trained our children to sing the song Kadesh Urchatz in all different, you know, melodies. The melody is not Misinai, that I can assure you, nor is the text. So who composed the text? Kadesh Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. It's very poetic, obviously. And why is it done so? Because to train the average Jew who may not have been learned to perform the Seder in its proper order. So the Kadesh Urchatz, and when you have it as a sing-song with rhyme scheme, so you remember this. You know, it's deeply ingrained in your memory. Kadesh Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid. There is a Haggadah called Haggadah Shlema from Rav Menachem Kasher. Rav Menachem Kasher, Zichron Lebracha, was an unusual person who back in 1940s began publishing an encyclopedic work on Medrash called Torah Shlema. It came out volume 1 and then volume 2, volume 3. After 40 years, he was up to the end of Vayikra. But he was blessed with some sons who were capable and able to carry through, and the whole project was finished. So today you get the Torah Shlema. You open up Reshit Bara Elokim et Hashemayim v'et Haaretz, and on the page, every medrash in the world that was ever said about that pasuk. And then it goes to the next pasuk, and next pasuk, and next pasuk. So if you're looking for an anthology of medrash, there is nothing better, even today, than the Torah Shlema. Rav Menachem Kasher, Zichron Lebracha, before he passed away, issued a volume, almost his swan song, of one pasuk, which is in Devarim, was like beyond where he was up to, and he puts all the midrashim around the pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. An entire volume around medrash that has to do with Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That was his parting. I think it was very interesting how he leaves the world with this last volume. But ultimately, the whole Torah Shlema came out. While he was doing the Torah Shlema project, he had some sideshows. And one was in 1960, when he publishes the Haggadah Shlema. People think it's Haggadah Shlomo, but it's Shlema, means the complete Haggadah. And what is it? It's the text of the Haggadah with an anthology of all different midrashim that was said, or perushim that was said on the Haggadah. So it's not complete, because there are a zillion things that were said on the Haggadah, but it's a very nice spread. I would compare it to the Svarim on some of the Mesichtot, Shita Mekubetzet. It's an anthology of views that were said on the Haggadah. And furthermore, Rav Kasher had his eye on certain scholarly things that were pretty much unknown by most of the Gedolei Yisrael, like what's happening in the world of manuscripts. And he would take a peek and see how that's going to impact on the understanding of a text. Because a good chunk of the Haggadah is very much medrash, and this interested him very, very much so. So the what you have in the we're going to see this throughout this year in a few minutes, even we'll see an example of this. So the Rambam tells us that the Seder, why do I bring Rav Kasher? Because in his introduction, which is half the book is the introduction, he tells us some of the ground rules of what. So he talks about the song of Kadesh Urchatz Karpas, and lo and behold, Kadesh Urchatz Karpas is not the only one in the not the only game in town. There are 13 other poems. Now, most of us never heard of any of the others because we didn't grow up on any of the others. But these are poems that are different, but different in terms of words and style and so on, but out to accomplish the identical the idea. That is, that people should be able to do the Seder according to the order. And what's fascinating is sometimes there's a machloket, a dispute, as to what the order is. And that might show up in the different poems. That becomes important as well. For example, where do we do yachatz? So let's review. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, bingo, yachatz. So what's yachatz? We break the middle matzah, and we put the larger part aside for the afkoimen. You know, if you have grandchildren, you know, great-grandchildren, let them have their fun. And the smaller part you put back into the matzah, and so on. Fine, we're going to see that the Rambam doesn't know from yachatz at this point at all. Not only that, the Rambam doesn't even know from three matzahs. This is an Ashkenazi invention. The Rambam knows from two matzahs. Two matzahs. Just like you have every Shabbat and Yom Tov, Lecha Mishnah. And right before the eating of the matzah, which is after the Haggadah, after Gaal Yisrael, you drank the second cup already, you go wash your hands, the Rambam says, before you make hamaitzi, you break one of the matzot. And then you make the hamaitzi and the alachilat matzah on a matzah v'chetzi, on a matzah and a half. So 1 second, what happened to Lecha Mishnah? You'd never do that on Friday night. You wouldn't cut the challah before you make the hamaitzi. So the answer is that there's a special halacha of lechem oni, that on Seder night we have to eat poor man's bread. One of the explanations of poor man's bread is that they never had a whole loaf, but they only had sections and prusot, slices. And on Seder night, the halacha of lechem oni negates the obligation of lechem mishnah. That's the Rambam's view. Now Ashkenazim were ibechachomim, said, you know what, we can have lechem oni and lechem mishnah. If you start with three matzahs, you get your lechem mishnah, you get your two whole ones, and you get your broken one too. But the Rambam wasn't so smart, so he didn't have that at all. The Rambam believed that there is no chiyuv, the obligation of lechem mishnah, on Seder night. And hence the yachatz is very much later on in the Haggadah than it is in our Haggadah. And when we get to it, I'm going to try to explain conceptually what happened there. But there is a song, one of the songs that Rav Kasha brings, so you don't have the yachatz in its right place. Why? Because it wasn't there. Those communities didn't do yachatz at that place. And now we're going to see something phenomenal. Rambam writes this in the 12th century. Okay, so approximately between 1170 and 1180, he's writing the Mishnah Torah. He writes that it takes him 10 years to write the Mishnah Torah. Fine. So it's the second half of the 12th century. He's in Egypt when he's writing this. Right? But when the Rambam writes Halacha, Mishnah Torah, he's writing it for all times. For all times means in periods when there is Beit HaMikdash up and running and functioning, when everybody is in Eretz Yisrael performing the required agricultural mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. And he's writing also for people in the diaspora, in the Galut, in exile. Besada. And that's why two of the 14 books are Beit HaMikdash subjects. You don't find that at all in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch, who's dealing with Beit HaMikdash subjects? It's not on the table. But the Rambam, what's on the table, what's not on the table is irrelevant. He believed that you have to study all of Torah in every generation. And hence, it's important to deal with Nega Tzarat, no difference than dealing with the laws of Shabbat. Everything's important, and there's no such thing as not relevant. Rambam didn't accept the point, not relevant. Of course, there are things that are halacha lemaaseh that you have to do, and certain things that you can't do. Beseda, we understand that. But in terms of Talmud Torah, everything is relevant, everything is on the table. Now, Rambam has a choice. He's going to present the Seder night. Does he present the Seder night the way he had it in his home in Egypt, or the way his parents had it in Spain, because Rambam was born in Cordoba? Or does he present it as if Shlomo Melech is sitting down to his Seder in Yerushalayim and Beit HaMikdash is up and running? So you might think that he would write it like our Seder and then make some comments that in Beit HaMikdash, they did things differently. That would really have made sense. But he doesn't do that. he presents the Seder as if Beit HaMikdash is up and running, and there's Korban Pesach for everybody. And in six parenthetical inserts in this chapter, he will say, "Ubizman hazeh," but today, it's a parenthetical insert. We don't do this, or we do this, we substitute, whatever it is. He makes the point of what we do. And then at the end of his section of the laws of Chametz and Matzah, after he's already described the entire Seder from A to Z, he goes back and he says, well, now I'm going to tell you, if you just flip the page to source number 3, it says, Rambam Hilchot Chametz and Matzah Nusach HaHagadah, in the middle of the page, Nusach HaHagadah Shenagu Ba Yisrael Bizman HaGalut Kachi. This is the version of the Haggadah that exists in the days of the Galut, of the exile. You know, Rav Soloveitchik didn't like the word diaspora, by the way. He said it was much too refined an expression that gave legitimacy. He said it's golus, says it's exile, detachment. You're detached, and you feel it. You should feel it. If you're in the diaspora, that's okay, you know. So the Rambam, after all said and done, does provide us with the Haggadah of today. But that's not his basic presentation. So I go back to source number 1. Let's look at it again. Sidur asiyat mitzvot elu. Here's the order of the performance of the mitzvot b'leil chamisha asar on the night of the 15th. Kachu, it's exactly like this. Batchila muzgin kos lekol echad ve'echad. We pour out a cup for everybody. Umavarech borei pi agafen, make a bar pi agafen. Ve'omer alav kiddush hayom. You have kiddush, right? It's Yom Tov, you have kiddush. It's what we call kadesh, right? Okay. Zman ishechiyanu v'shoteh. And you drink the first cup. Okay. Sounds like our Seder, Kadesh. Then, v'achar kach, mivarech al netilat yadayim v'notel yadav. 1 second. The next thing on our agenda is urchatz. Kadesh, urchatz. What's urchatz? Every child knows that urchatz is to wash your hands without a bracha. Right? And urchatz knows that it's going to lead to karpas. And karpas means eating less than a kezayit of vegetable. And it's dipped in salt water. Now let's see how the Rambam understands urchatz and karpas. V'achar kach mivarech al netilat yadayim v'notel yadav. First of all, there's netilat yadayim with a bracha. Start. Second, mevi'im shulchan aruch, not the sefer shulchan aruch. You bring a prepared table, what we call today a kara. You have to realize people used to be on like couches, reclining on couches, and they had coffee tables. So that was the shulchan. Today we sit around the table, so we make a ka'ara, we make a seder plate. So the seder plate is going to play the role of the shulchan of that's prepared. And what's on the shulchan aruch? Mevin shulchan aruch ve'alav, and on it, maror, yerek acher, another vegetable, matzah, charoset, gufo shel keves ha-pesach, right, the lamb, that's the lamb chops of the Korban Pesach. Ubasar chagiga shel yom arba'asar. This was a special Korban chagiga, not to be confused with the Korban that was brought on Yom Tov Day in Yerushalayim at the time of Aliyah L'Regel, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, you brought a Korban chagiga. There was a special Korban that was offered on Erev Pesach, Yom Arba'asar, the 14th, which was there for one purpose only. We are to eat the Korban Pesach al hasova on a full stomach. So you have to fill yourself up with something. And what could be better than with good fleisch, a good piece of meat? So the basar chagiga was actually the filler. And when a person ate the Korban Pesach already, it wasn't that he's looking for a great main course. But the Korban Pesach was essentially the dessert. It was the kinuach, or in Greek, it was the afikoman. It was the kinuach, it was the dessert. It was the last thing. So, you know, sometimes you eat the dessert, but you don't eat it with gusto and so on, unless you're going to a wedding in America that has a Viennese table after you already had a full meal at the smorgasbord, a second full meal at the dinner, and then it looks like it's right after Tisha B'Av when they roll out the Viennese table and everybody pounces on all the puddings and what not, right? The The idea of eating the Korban Pesach ala sova means you're supposed to eat it on a full stomach, and therefore the halacha brought something onto the table that's going to make you eat first before you eat the Korban Pesach. Okay, so those things are on the table, or in our words, the seder plate. And then it says, u'bizman hazeh, but today, here's the first bizman hazeh, and there are going to be six of them. Mevi'im al ha'shulchan, what you put on the table, or you put on the kara, on the seder plate, shnei minei basar, echad zecha lepesach, v'echad zecha l'chagiga. Two pieces of cooked meat. Now, Ashkenazim don't do that. Ashkenazim put a zroa, which is a piece of meat, basically a shank bone with some meat on it, that was roasted, and a hard-boiled egg. The hard-boiled egg most probably kicked in because of Avelut. Avelut. We know that right after the Levaya, there's a Sudat Havra'ah, and we serve the Avelim bread and hard-boiled eggs. And eggs, something has to do with something about the world going around, whatever. There's all kinds of symbolism of the egg. Some of the Ashkenazim even have a custom later in the Haggadah to chop up a hard-boiled egg and eat it in salt water, right? You have that. So I remember we had that in our house as well. What was that?
Before the meal.
Right. That's a minhag. That's not anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. But Rambam doesn't have salt water at all, as we'll see. So the you have here, instead of the two pieces of meat for the Korban Pesach and the Korban Chagiga, Rambam says you substitute just two pieces of meat. So I say again, Ashkenazim have a zra and a beitzah. It is also possible that the reason that Ashkenazim substituted one of the pieces of meat for an egg was because of poverty reasons. You know, a piece of meat was expensive. Was very, very expensive. I'll just give you an anecdote. The Rav's great-grandfather, his namesake, Rabbi Yosef Dov Ber HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Valozhin Yeshiva and later to become the Rav of Brisk, the author of the Beit HaLevi, or as they call it, the Beis HaLevi. So he was once asked a shayla by a woman, an almona, who came on Erev Pesach with a shayla, about drinking arba kosot with milk. Can she use milk for the arba kosot, for the four cups? And without giving a psak halacha, he went to the kupat staka and gave her money so she can buy some chickens. He realized if anybody is asking that kind of a shayla, you have to understand where that person is coming from. And obviously they didn't have besari for that family. And he felt that was the thing that had to be done. So it is possible that one piece of meat to put on the zroa was more than enough than certain families were able to afford. An egg was a cheaper commodity that they can put on there. That it's possible. I'm not 100% sure, but it's possible that that's what kicked it in. But anyway, the Rambam doesn't have that. He has two pieces of meat, and the Sfaradim till this very day. That's what they do. They have two pieces of meat, as one is for remembering the Korban Pesach, and one is to remember the Korban Chagiga. Right, so now we know what the Kara looks like by the Rambam, and its counterpoint, what it looks like by us. In the Halacha Bet, he continues, Matchil u'mavarech bora pi adama, and this is what we call karpas, v'lokeach yerek, you take a vegetable, he doesn't identify which yerek, anything that you can make a bora pi adama, u'mitabel oto b'charoset, and you dip it in charoset. Now, none of us do that. Now, here's where we have the salt water. And Rambam doesn't have salt water at all. He has charoset. And you're going to see that charoset is something that the Rambam has in use several times during the Seder, more than in an Ashkenazi Seder. So he has it for karpas, and we're going to see he has it also for moror, and he has it for the korech. He's using the charoset several times over. And what exactly is the ingredients of the charoset according to the Rambam? So let's start with Ashkenazi charoset. I make the charoset in my house. I've been doing this for many, many years. And you start with apples and nuts, right? And you chop it up, and you put some cinnamon on it, and you pour some wine on it. That's it. That's it. That's the charoset. But the Rambam has dates, figs, raisins, right? And also wine, which is grapes. Okay, so you can buy it. They sell charoset, and if you're going to buy charoset, and because you can't make charoset for whatever reason, and you want Ashkenazi charoset, look at the ingredients. See what they put into the charoset. Now, I remember about a few years ago, Ben and Jerry's made charoset flavored ice cream. So somebody asked me a shaila, if you can use the charoset flavored ice cream for charoset. I said, well, if the Beis HaLevi would have given a psak to that lady to use milk for the abrikosot, then you could use the charoset flavored ice cream for charoset, fine. But that was just a shtick, you know, the charoset flavored ice cream. But the charoset of the Sfaradim, it tastes very sweet, because you have the dates and you have the you have figs, you have raisins and so on, and wine. What's the difference? How can you have a machloket? You know how to make charoset already. I mean, the symbolism of the charoset is there was the cement. Just to remind us that we had the tit. It was the cement that was used, the mortar, to cement the blocks together and the building of the construction works and the Mitzrayim. Beseda. So what's the difference? So the answer is that they symbolize two different things. Two very, very different things. The apple is mentioned in the Medrash based on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Tachat HaTapuach Orarticha. Under the apple tree, you were awakened. You were awakened. What is this all about? So Chazal say that when the edict came out that they're going to throw all the baby boys into the Nile River, so people just refused to bring children into this world. And they realized, why should we bring children into this world if they're just going to be destined to be thrown into the Nilus, into the Nile River? So and they were also pretty exhausted. The women under the apple trees would adorn themselves and make themselves attractive to their husbands, so to guarantee that they should cohabit and there should be a chance for the next generation to come out. And Chazal said, this is why b'shchut nashim tzidkaniyot nigalu Yisrael b'mitzrayim. That was the tzidkis. It wasn't that, they daven five times a day or whatever, or they shuckled a lot. This was a tremendous sacrifice on their part, knowing that their offspring might be destined to the Nile River. And they were willing to do it. They were willing to do it. And Chazal say that they had mirrors to see themselves and beautify themselves. And by the way, this, Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav said, was the reason why we cover mirrors in a shiva house. The reason why we cover a mirror, because a mirror is something that we use to beautify, and the avel or avela is not supposed to beautify herself or himself in any way, because it's the negation of human dignity. And beautifying yourself is human dignity. And because it's a davar shebetzin'ah, husband and wife cohabiting on Shabbat during Shiva is also prohibited, even though you don't sit Shiva formally, but matters of betzin'ah are in effect during a Shabbat. So that's why the mirrors have to be covered even on Shabbat. A lot of people don't know that. So it's part of this halacha. So the idea of using mirrors, when they came to building the Mishkan, so the women donated these mirrors which were made of copper for the kiyor, which was for purpose of tahara. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, this we're going to use? No, this is it's not something that we should bring into the Beit HaMikdash. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, this is what you're supposed to bring into the Beit HaMikdash. Is exactly what we want, because there was the Nashim Tzidkaniyot Shenigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim. And it actually fits in very nicely with a thought that I once heard from Rav Lau Sr., who I heard him in Birkenau on Yom HaShoah, the March of the Living, in 1994. And he spoke about the Pasuk, Milchama Lashem Ba'amalek Midor Dor, that there's going to be a war against the Amalek every generation. And if you couldn't figure out which it is in our generation, read the newspapers, and you get a pretty clear picture of it. So we say on Seder night, Shebechol Dor V'Dor Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloteinu. That's the same thing, the same Dor V'Dor, every generation. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu B'Yadam. So Rav Lau said, what ammunition do we have to guarantee that we're going to survive the Amalek of every generation? He said, the answer is Midor Dor, to guarantee the continuity of generations. And that's exactly what the Medrash says about the women in Mitzrayim. They guaranteed the continuity of the generations, the Midor Dor. And that was a tremendous, tremendous thing. Yeah. So that's why we have apple in the charoset. Exactly. The apple in the charoset comes from this medrash. Tacha tatapuach orartiga. So it's actually to remember the difficulty, the tzara v'yagon, the evel, the, not the evel, the shiabud, the avdut, the Ashkenazi charoset puts a premium on the difficulties in Mitzrayim and was symbolized by the under the apple tree, what was done. So that's one. But the Rambam had a different story here. He saw the charoset as looking ahead to the species of Eretz Yisrael, of the tamarim and the te'enim and the anavim, you know, the tzimukim, raisins as grapes and so on. We're looking forward to the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael and so on. A much more optimistic take on what the charoset was all about. And my always says that, you know, Ashkenazim are always boring. Sfardim are lebedik, right? Sfardim are very, very lebedik. I mean, even you go to a shiva by the Sfardim, they're all eating. And it's by Ashkenazim, you know, you have to, you do your favor if you give you a cup of water. But the idea that also in the slichot of Yom Neroim, are much more upbeat in the Sephardi slichot than the Ashkenazi slichot. It could be a result of our history and so on. But it's also somewhat cultural. So here we have the Rambam saying that you dip the charoset, you dip the karpas into the charoset, and then he says va'ochel kizayit. Who v'chol ha'masubim imo kol echad v'chad ein ochel pachot mikizayit. We eat a kizayit's worth of karpas. Now, again, growing up as a child, I remember how they emphasized that you eat a small piece of karpas and you don't eat a kizayit. And one of the reasons you don't eat kizayit is because you don't want to make a bracha achrayna afterwards and you don't want to make another bar pi adama on the morar. So the bar pi adama that we said on the charosa, on the karpas already carries us for the morrow later. We have all kinds of reasons why we eat less than a kazayit. Here comes the Rambam, and he tells us, you eat a kazayit's worth. Why? And then, just in case you didn't get the point, he repeats himself and he says, ein ochlim pachot mikazayit. You don't eat less than a kazayit, which seems to be rather superfluous. He just told us you have to eat a kazayit, and then next line he says, and you can't eat less than a kazayit. I would have figured that out by myself. So why is the Rambam doing that? So I have a whole thing about the Rambam's style. When he repeats himself to drive home a point, he's reacting to a known view that he's dissenting, that he's disagreeing with. The Rambam apparently was aware of the view that you don't eat a kazayit's worth of karpas. And he's ramming home the point, I believe you do eat a kazayit's worth, and you don't eat less than a kazayit. By ramming home in that point, you make it crystal clear of what the Rambam had in mind here. So he has kazayit. Now, it was the Vilna Gaon who, in many things, deviated from known standard Ashkenazi practice and adopted the Rambam's point of view. So in the Vilna Gaon's Seder, there were also two matzahs like the Rambam. In the Vilna Gaon's Seder, there was eating of karpas of a kazayit's nature. So fine, so those who are under the influence of the Voloshin Yeshiva and perhaps some from Brisk who had this tradition from the Vilna Gaon, so may do things differently. The reason I pointed out to you is not only because you have to know all the different views if you are Ben Torah and Talmid Chacham, but because you might find in your house somebody coming and doing it differently and so on. So you should be aware that it's not amaratzes, they're not ignoramus, it's just the opposite. They're doing it because there is actually some view that gives this somewhat backing. And then the Rambam says, after we've eaten the karpas, v'acharkach okrin hashulchan milifnei korei ha'agada levado. We remove the table, that coffee table, that today we call it the kara. Now, a lot of people don't do this. Some people cover the seder plate. Some people do move it physically from the table. It's not something that's carried out emphatically in Ashkenazi homes. But the Rambam says you should move it away. And all this moving back and forth was to stimulate the children to say, hey, what's going on here? All you got to do is to ask the question, Ma nishtana alayla zeh mikol halilot? What is going on here? And after this was done, the second cup is poured, mozgin kos hasheni, v'kan haben shoel. Now it's the time for the child to ask. Now, if you can recall back in your recesses of memory, what was the first Mishnah you've ever studied or learned in your lifetime? So I ask this question sometimes to a general audience, and I usually get answers like either Pirkei Avot, Masechet Avot, or Masechet Brachot, or some other Masechet that they may have studied in school in fifth grade or in seventh grade or ninth grade, whatever. But I know the answer. The answer is, it was studied in kindergarten. It's Manishtana Halayla Hazeh Mikol HaLeilot. But the only thing is, the kindergarten teacher didn't tell you it was a Mishnah, and no likelihood she'd even know it was a Mishnah. But it's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in the last chapter of Masechet Psachim. And it says, and here the Rambam echoes it, but he says something interesting. V'kan haben shoel. Now the child asks. V'omer hakore, the reader says, Manishtana Laila Zemikolos. One second. Who asks the Manishtana? The kid. Yeah, that's the way it's done in our house. But what does the Rambam say? V'omer hakore. Who's the kore? Usually the father of the household. Usually the father of the household. It could be somebody else. You can rotate also. Sometimes it's a grandfather if he's present. V'omer hakore. Rambam says, V'kana ben shoel. Now is the time for the kid to ask kashas. Okay, bakasha, what do you have to ask? Ask whatever you want to ask. Then the kore continues, Manishtana alayla zemikol alayot. That's not the way we grew up. We grew up that the kids asked the question. So much so that there's actually a girsa, a version of this Rambam that does not say v'omer hakore, but it says v'omer lakore. V'kana ben shoel. Now the son asks, and he says to the reader, Manishtana alayla zemikol alayot. That is to say, the son is the object of the sentence. Manishtana. But very nice and dandy, there is such a girsa, and most probably was quote-unquote corrected because somebody thought something's out of sync here. But checking the various manuscripts that we have of the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam wrote V'omer HaKore, and the Rambam means to say that the children ask whatever's on their minds, and the Rambam didn't believe that we're supposed to program the children like a computer or like a parrot to say Manishtana, because he didn't think there was much gain when you have a kid, you know, sing Manishtana, doesn't have a clue what he's asking. That's not what it's all about. But we're supposed to arouse curiosity and somehow get the kids to ask whatever they want to ask that indicates that something's different tonight, the night of the Seder. Following that, the reader, in the case the father, who's the educator of the house, says the Manishtana. He's asking himself the questions? No. So the Rav once said that 60% of the answer to a question is the proper understanding of the question. Many times we study a Gemara, or study a section of the Tosfot, they'll spend a lot of time trying to understand the question of the Tosfot. And then comes the resolution. So you may say, well, this was a waste of time. Why do you have to tell me what the question was? I have the answer. The answer is that if you didn't fully appreciate the question, you'll never really fully appreciate the answer. You have to know what is being responded to, what point was being responded to. And hence, it is extremely important that the question becomes explained, no less so than the response. And hence, the task of the reader, the father, the grandfather, whoever is the educator of the house, is to explain what's called a good question. I'll give you an example from the world of education. So I remember kids in class asking questions. So there's a thing called the klutz kasha, right? Klutz kasha is a really ridiculous, dumb question, right? A dumb question. The question is how a teacher reacts to a klutz kasha. So if he makes fun of him in front of everybody, so he's done no justice whatsoever, neither to himself nor to the kid and nor to the class for that. All he did was he bought himself a moment of laughter at the expense of the child. What a teacher has to do is tell the kid, not a bad comment, but let's fix it up. You help him doctor up the question in a way that it becomes a more solid question. That's called education. That's called chinuch. You explain to him why the way you said it was a little bit off the mark, but you missed the point, but just add this point, and now what you said We're going to fill in the blanks, and it now has some basis. The question that you have is some basis. That's healthy, very, very healthy. We let the son, according to the Rambam, ask whatever he feels like asking, and then the father takes over as going to elaborate on what might be considered the good questions of Seder night. So we're going to see later that we have the four sons. Now, in our homes, every son is the Ben HaChacham, every single one of them, without a question, right? They say a story of the grandmother rolling the carriage of the two grandchildren, twins, and somebody asks, what's their names? He's the doctor, he's the lawyer, right? And by the way, because of that, psychiatrists make a good living. Let the kids do what they want to do. Let them do what they want to do. And you'll see. And if they don't turn out exactly the, that's also okay. Keep loving them. Keep loving them. That's all. I've seen kids who grew up and became doctors, hated every minute of it. It's not good. That's not the way to go through life. Just because your mother wanted you to be a doctor, sadder, you know, she'll get over it. Or else she should get over it. But the idea of having four sons in the Haggadah, and the four sons is not just the four. There are many, but they break down into four head categories. So the first one is the Ben HaChacham, who's asking for Ma'idot v'chukim v'mishpatim ashetziva Hashem Elokeinu etchem. He's asking for halachot, mitzvot. He's not asking for stories. That this Ben Tam, we'll have to define it later, who is the Ben Tam? He's asking for stories. Mazot, what's going on here? So you tell him the story, once upon a time. But the Ben HaChacham, he's not asking for the story. He's asking for the chukim and mishpatim, the halachot. So you have to teach him the dinim of Pesach. Vavatai molo kilchot ha-Pesach. What are the hilchot Pesach? There's chametz and matzah, right? Matzah and chametz. There's moror. And there's korban Pesach. Those are the big three of the night of the Seder. And that's what the Manishtana is all about. Manishtana is, what is different? Tonight we have special mitzvot. Shebechol ha-lelot anu ochlim chametz ha-matzah alayla zeh kulo matzah. Shebechol ha-lelot shar yirakot alayla zeh maror. Shebechol ha-lelot anu ochlim basar tzli shaluk u-mevushal. Halayla hazeh kulo tzli. All the nights we eat meat that's cooked, potted, roasted, whatever. Tonight, it's all on the open fire, right? It's a mangal, the open fire. You know what mangal is? Everybody knows what a mangal is. You know what mangal is? It's a Rosh Tevot. But it's really magnal. But it's hard to say magnal. Magnal is Marechet Grill Niyad LePicnic. It's a portable system to cook in a picnic. Marechet Grill Niyad means portable, LePicnic. But we say mangal because it's easier to say mangal than magnal. That's all. But it's lamb over the open fire, roasted, fine, sliyesh. So if you take a look at the Rambam, look at his, and this is Beit HaMikdash is up and running when he's writing. It's Halacha Bet. Right, the second line. V'achakach okrin al shulchan milifnei korei agada levado. Mozega kosha sheni pour the second cup. Kana ben shoel, now the son asks. V'omer hakorei, and the reader says, Manishtan alayla zeh mikol alelot. Shebechol alelot, look what he asks first. He's got the tibul first, the dunking. But in the Rambam, the tibul is charoset. Fine. And then he has, because that's the way it's found in the Chumash. Al matzot umrorim yochluhu, and the reason why moror is in plural because there are different vegetables that can satisfy the requirement of moror. As the Mishnah says, ve'elu yotzim dechovatam, there are five different vegetables that can pass as moror. So therefore, the Torah calls it in plural mirorim, and that's what the Rambam writes here. And then he has shebcholay lelot anochlim ben yoshvim ben misubin halayla zeh kulanu misubin, we're sitting reclined. That last question there is not found in the Mishnah. And it's amazing where the Rambam got it from. It's in our Haggadot, but it's not in the Mishnah at all. But what you do have in the Mishnah is the question about Korban Pesach. Okay, and then the next line in Halacha Gimel, he says, "Bezman hazeh, but today, eino omer v'alayla zeh kulotzli." We don't say that last, that bracha, about that question about the Korban Pesach. She'ein lanu korban. We don't have a korban. Now flip the page to source number 2, first third of the page, and it says, Haggadah shel Pesach, Kaf Taf Yud, Ktav Yad, Cambridge, 152. You got that one? In case you go there, you should know. You know what to tell the librarian if you want to look at this. So there's a manuscript of the, obviously, Middle Ages of the Haggadah shel Pesach. And it reads there, in the Haggadah, V'alayla zeh hayinu ochlim beveit ha-migdash kulotzli. We used to eat in the Beit HaMikdash only roasted. You know what that means? That means there was a community in Europe that in the 12th, 13th, 14th century, that refused to remove the question about Korban Pesach from the Manishtana. But they doctored it up, just like we do with Pesach Shayu Avoteinu Omim Beit HaMikdash, Zman Shebeit HaMikdash HaKayam. Once upon a time, there was Korban Pesach. Why did they eat Korban Pesach? Here, in the Manishtana itself, there's a version that says, Halayla Zeh Bizman Hayinu Ochlim. We used to eat, once upon a time, in Beit HaMikdash, Kulotzli. Now, obviously, a child wouldn't be able to ask that question. This is not a question that a child's going to know. He's got to know a little bit of history and halacha and everything. This is a question that was for adult consumption, for adults to ask the questions and restate the questions. So much so that the Rav quoted a Chatam Sofer, which was very, very rare. Chatam Sofer was Rav Moshe Seifer from Preshburg. He was born in Frankfurt, actually, tail end of the 18th century. And he said that even though our minhag is that the children do ask the Manishtana, when the father or whoever's reading continues, shouldn't begin with Avadim Ayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, but should backtrack to Manishtana Alayla Zeh Mikol Hadot, and take some time to explain the questions. In other words, he fundamentally accepted the idea that the Rav developed later on, that the Manishtana is explanation of what's called a good question. This is what you should be asking. You should be asking, if you're a Ben Chacham, you should be asking about the mitzvot of the Laila, which is Pesach, Korban Pesach, which is Matzah, which is Maror, which is Haseva, reclining, and the special halachot of Cherut, of dippings, and so on. So we have some interesting examples of how the Rambam took to the Seder. And I'm flipping back to the first page, right in the middle of the page, where it says Halacha Dalit. And then after the Manishtana, it says, I'm sorry, at the end of where it says Gimel, where I just read Bezman Hazeh, in the first page where it says Halacha Gimel, in the middle of the page, where it says Bezman Hazeh Eino Omer V'Alayla Zeh Kulotzli She'en Lanu Korban. Today we do not say Laila Zeh Kulotzli because we don't have a Korban. So you see that that fragment from the manuscript in Cambridge was not the Rambam's reading, for sure not. And then he says U'matchil Bignut V'korei ad shegomer drash parsha arami over avi kula. That is the core of the Haggadah. The core of our Haggadah is a section of Medrash based on the psukim from the mitzvah of Bikurim. We're going to have to explain this a little more thoroughly next week, why that was lifted out of context and not from Sefer Shmot. My gosh, Sefer Shmot is the story. The story of Yitziat Mitzrayim is Shmot va'era bo'en b'shalach. So why don't we lift psukim from there? No, we dafka jump to Sefer Dvarim, in the mitzvah of Bikurim, and there's a summation, if you may, of four or five psukim, and we use the medrash. So we're going to get back to that next week. I'm just going to jump to Halacha Dalid, where it says, U'machzir HaShulchan, the Seder plate is brought back, V'omer, and we say, again, this is Beit HaMikdash's standing. Pesach Zesh, Anu Ochlim, Ashum, why are we eating the Korban Pesach? Why are we eating the Korban Pesach? And then a few lines down, Moror Zesh, Anu Ochlim, why do we eat the Moror? And a few lines down, Matzah zu sha'anu ochlim. Now today, we don't say Pesach sha'anu ochlim because we don't eat the Korban Pesach. We say Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bisman shebeit hamikdash. Why did they eat the Korban Pesach? But take a look at the order that the Rambam has here. He has Pesach, Moror, and Matzah. What's the order in our Haggadah? Pesach, Matzah, and Moror. So what happened? The Rambam forgot? This is obviously deliberate. It's very deliberate. And the Rav explained very simply. Maror is not an independent mitzvah. There is no mitzvah in the Chumash that you have to eat maror on Seder night. The mitzvah is that with the Korban Pesach, you have maror. It's the chazeret, the chrein with the gefilte fish. You have to have Pesach, Korban Pesach, with maror together. Now it says, al matzot umrorim yochluhu. Matzah also has to be with the Korban Pesach. Yeah, but matzah is a different pasuk. But erev tochlu matzot. There is another pasuk that tells us that there's an independent mitzvah to eat matzah on Seder night. And that's why we have the mitzvah of eating matzah on Seder night. Just to be fair, I know there are Daf Yomi people here, and they're going to stop me because they remember Psachim Daf Kuf Kaf. There's a dispute in the Gemara whether matzah today is biblical or not. We have the opinion that it is biblical. But Erev Tochlu Matzot is biblical. It's not a rabbinic add-on. You have to eat a Kzayat Matzah for sure. But Maror, according to everyone, is rabbinic. What does it mean, rabbinic? After the Churban, after the destruction, and no longer do we have Korban Pesach, so Chachamim said, eat some Maror anyway. And remind ourselves, as if the current events wasn't enough maror, we needed a piece of lettuce, you know, to help us remind ourselves with the bitter days. The idea of Pesach going together with maror is the halacha of Korban Pesach, and that's why the Rambam has in Days of Beit Hamikdash the discussion of Pesach and then maror. Matzah can wait; that's the last thing on the agenda. But when it comes to today, where we don't have Korban Pesach. So matzah remains as biblical, but maror is downgraded to rabbinic, and hence the order is Pesach, matzah, and maror. So Pesach is just Zechel HaMikdash, we just remember. So we, you know, that's the first, the lead mitzvah, but it's not here with us today. Fine, so we have Pesach, matzah, maror, or Pesach, maror, or matzah. I'll just conclude with, I remember in 1981, when Yosef Mendelevich, one of the great refuseniks, famous refuseniks, you know, I would say second to Sharansky, but they were both giborim. So he was in jail for 11 years until finally he got out. And he had a sister living in a Alon Shvut, and we lived in a Alon Shvut at the time, and that was his first address. So I got to know him. And then 1984, the story I said before, I did army with him. So we were in the same platoon. So Mamish got to know Yosef Mendelevich. He's a tzaddik and a real gibor. I'm telling you, a real, real gibor. So he was telling us about a seder they had in Siberia, in the jail. So they were allowed to take a walk around the gate, the yard, just a little bit, even though they were technically in solitary confinement. And there was a little bit of a brook that exited from the wall of the... And they decided that they were going to have a seder, just by memory. Everybody pulled together things they remember. They're going to write it down on a piece of paper. You know, this is matzah, this is this, whatever they remembered. So he said, Maror, we didn't have a petek for, because every day was Maror. I remember him telling us this. Every day, we didn't need a petek for Maror. We knew what Maror was. But then he said there was a brook of little water, stream. And they didn't know what, but they said, you have to jump over the stream. They didn't remember anything about it. They knew there was some association with Pesach and a stream. So they jumped over. One, two, there were five guys there. And they all did it one after the other. Turns out later, he found out, it was the minhag of the seventh day of Pesach of Kriyat Yamsuf. But okay, they were, you know, they weren't religious, the family at all, very assimilated family. And they didn't remember, that's all. But what was interesting, he said, they all jumped over. All five guys eventually made it to Eretz Yisrael exactly in the order that they jumped over this little river. He was the fifth, he was the last to get there. And that's really amazing. And he showed us that he tried to have things smuggled in. He became Baal Tshuva in jail. He learned Hebrew in jail. And in the soles of shoes, they slipped papers. And they got him a parsha, Ki Tisa, from the Chumash. And it was the only parsha they were able to get him in. The first Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael was Parshat Ki Tisa. And that was the parsha that he was attached to. It was really absolutely amazing. That was the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim in every sense of the word. But we have our own stories of galut and troubles and so on. And that's why Chayav Adam wrote that Atzmo Kilu Yatzam Mitzrayim. That's what we're going to strive to try to get to Mirtz Hashem on Seder night. Okay, so we can still bring these pages. If you want to hand it back, I'll be happy to bring it next week. And we'll continue with this. Okay, cool.